We'll call the meeting of the Health and Human Service Committee to order. We do have a quorum, so we will accept a motion for the minutes. Representative Peterson moves approval of the minutes from Thursday, January 19th. Are there any additions, corrections, or changes that need to be made to the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the minutes from January 19th, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The minutes from January 19th are adopted. Members, we're going to go a little bit out of order this morning with the bills. We're going to start with Representative Backer's bill here. And since he's not a member of the committee, I will move that House File 324 come before us. And I will move that the bill be re-referred to the Committee on Civil Law. Representative Backer, we have the bill before us. If you could please state your name for the record and then give us your testimony.
It's Jeff Backer. Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. The bill HF 324 is a unique piece of legislation that is modeled and designed identical for the EMS providers across the United States. Replica would allow compact states' EMS workers to work across state lines. Use me as an example right now. I am an EMT in Browns Valley, Minnesota. Our district serves three counties, two states. We go into South Dakota and into two counties in Minnesota, and I have to be registered as an EMS in both states, as an EMT in both states. So I got to get licensed in both states. But even a bigger issue is like when we see down in these disasters, like this week in Georgia, if they want to call other EMTs into that area, it's a big, long process. So this helps to simplify it so we can utilize the resources from other states sooner and quicker. Currently, there are seven states that have passed this. Eight more are on the dock, so we would like to have Minnesota be one more of a state. This compact does come in effect when 10 states approve it. Today I have Buck with the Minnesota Ambulance Association. I think you know him quite well, but we will turn it over to you.
Welcome to the committee. If you could please introduce yourself and give us your testimony.
Mr. Chair and members, Buck McAlpin, representing the Minnesota Ambulance Association today and other EMS providers. This is a bill our association's looked at and worked on for a few years. And first of all, Mr. Chair, I have to thank Elizabeth who put this together. It is a very large bill. It has lots of sections to it. And our association still is working through it quite a lot and looking at all the pieces of it. But it's a bill that we support and need to work on closely with our state EMS regulatory board that presented to Chairman Dean's committee yesterday. And the idea behind Replica is exactly what Representative Backer said. Lots of border stuff. Secondly, in our air medical work, whether it's Mayo Air or North Memorial or LifeLink or Sanford, all border state stuff. And our air medical division is operating with the FAA, so the airspace isn't controlled, but we do have state licensures for our certifications for EMTs and paramedics that have to have us be licensed in numerous states, even if we're nationally registered. So as we pass Replica and keep moving it on and adding states, that allows us to cross over there. I did get from Ms. Larson, I think it's four committees this bill has to go to. It does set up a Replica advisory group in the state and then a larger national group around Replica, around what we do with EMS professionals across the country. I thought we had 28,000, but Executive Director Spector testified yesterday from the EMS Regulatory Board. There's 31,000 EMTs alone, and that's separate from the other 3,800 paramedics. So we have about 35,000 Minnesota folks alone that fall under this category that we'd like to have Replica apply to. And the interesting thing about Replica, it really can't be changed a lot legislatively. The few changes we've made that Elizabeth sent me that we did go through with the Replica folks, they've got a full-time person from the National EMT Association assigned to it that's worked on it with us. And this bill is supported by every large national trade association, American Ambulance Association, the emergency physicians, and the SEMSO, the EMS directors. So this is the first time I've seen so many national state associations behind something like this to move it on. So after the 10 state associations come together, then we have to sit down and the groups will start to meet and decide how we work to have other states. I know we've reached out to our neighboring states and asked what we can do as a large trade association to help them start to move Replica forward in their states.
All right, thank you. Questions from the committee? Representative Liebling.
Thank you very much, and good morning. So just help me understand this a little bit better, if you would. So does this change at all the standards for EMTs or EMS personnel in Minnesota?
Mr. McAlpin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, no, it doesn't. And actually, one piece that we actually like about it, working with our ambulance association, to drive a wheelchair van in Minnesota, you have to be fingerprinted and go through a background check. We don't require that for our EMS personnel. As Replica rolls out, we would be required to do that, and the systems have thought that that's actually a good idea and things that we should do. We follow the national registry standard in here in Minnesota for testing, so it's a national standard across the country. So it's the same amount of training, whether you're a paramedic or an EMT, and they follow the same curriculum across the country to be in the Replica model.
Let me also comment.
Senator Backer.
Yes, I'm chair and members. It's really similar to our driver's license concept. You know, we are, any of us who live on the border, who want to drive to Iowa, South Dakota, North Dakota, we don't have to get another driver's license. So it's the same concept there, Representative.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. See, I kind of forgot what I was going to ask there. But so does this, from the point of view of the people who are served, not the associations, what is the impact here? Are people affected at all? The person who might, of course, no one wants to be a customer, but for a person who might be a customer, if you will, an EMT service, will this have any impact for that person?
Representative Becker.
Yeah, Chair and Representative. You know, it's we as EMTs get nationally certified. You know, obviously, what happened a couple nights ago, we all have common training. That's why Representative Neuberger, Dr. Jensen, and I were all able to work together. This is no difference than going to Georgia, Louisiana. The challenge is if we don't get this, there's a lot more paperwork. When we as EMTs, paramedics, want to go and help in a natural disaster, currently the process is very slow. So we are not providing good customer service because we can't go down there and provide service to these individuals in need. So this just opens it up, so we can be down there quicker, because obviously when there's emergency, you have a certain window of time. Current law slows that down, so that's where we have. So good question. Thank you.
Right. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I remembered what my other question was going to be. So, you know, that sounds great. And just if we, you know, God forbid, have a natural disaster here and we get EMTs coming from Georgia, Alabama, wherever they might come from, and they do something, somebody does something, you know, unprofessional, whatever, what kind of control do we have? What kind of, you know, do we have then the same kind of disciplinary control over that person, or, you know, how does all of that work?
Mr. McAlpin.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, two things. It falls back to the state's complaint review. So absolutely, that state may not be as strict as us in regards, but it also falls back into the Replica Compact, this board that it forms that would overview things like that. And even stepping a little back to your earlier question, one of the reasons we're very interested in Replica is today in Minnesota, as we cross borders, I know a lot of our EMS personnel that aren't part of large healthcare systems that can afford to do it cross the border and aren't certified in other states. And I'll bring your service up as an example. I know they're crossing the border often, and they're probably not licensed in the Dakotas. And technically, they should be for legal reasons, liability reasons, and medical direction reasons. So right now, the governor declares a declaration in some state, and they do the interstate compact through the Office of Public Safety. We can do some of that now, and this kind of cleans up what we do with that.
And a comment on that, when I was mayor in 2007, we had a flood, and we obviously, when half the town was flooded, myself as an EMT and a lot of other individuals, we had to pull other EMTs, but we could not pull them 13 miles away from Sisseton or 8 miles south from Wilmar, we had to pull them out from Minnesota because we did not have any agreement. We were able to do it, but we were pulling them out from Detroit Lakes. So they were coming down to serve and take call time because obviously I was not, and other people could not take call time during that. So this just from a service point of view makes sense.
So, Mr. Chair, I mean, thank you. And finally, so, that, you know, that sounds great. And, you know, what if, somebody comes from South Dakota and delivers service in Minnesota and they do something wrong? How does the consumer, you know, if it's a Minnesota EMT, we have the board and a person can make a complaint. What do they do if the person comes from out of state? Is that going to be... I'm just pausing here while you, if you need a moment there. But anyway, I was going to say, is that going to be confusing to the consumer? Are they going to know where they should report the incident or, you know, how to go up the chain? Because clearly they're not going to be able to go to South Dakota or wherever the person comes from.
Correct. Mr. McAlpin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, each state would have their complaint review board, our EMS regulatory board. All the way back to when we formed our independent board, one of the best tools of it today is the independent complaint review panel, which is very busy. Folks, consumers and customers do use it, and they do report behavior. And they can report for each state. And what Ms. Klebkus was just showing me is that can be reported also back to other states where they're from. Because you're exactly right. If I am from Alabama, and I staff an ambulance with Representative Backer and Rook because no one's there. And that does happen when we go to other states. We have crew members that will get in with Louisiana is probably the prime example where our Minnesota folks with our strike teams, we've got a very elaborate strike team system here that if we know a hurricane's coming, we'll activate our strike teams and about some of the big systems will send 15, 20 vehicles down at a time to stage and work with their crews. We're responsible back to our home state and to their state about what we do when we're there.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure I got the answer, though, to my question, or maybe I just didn't understand the answer. So where is the consumer? I'm concerned about people in Minnesota, but there's somebody here from another state helping out, you know, which is a great thing. They do something unprofessional or the consumer thinks they did. Where is the Minnesota consumer supposed to make a complaint? Is the Minnesota consumer going to know who to complain to?
Let me answer that. Yeah,
Representative Backer.
Yeah, Chair and members. They're going to make the complaint to their... it happened in our situation in Browns Valley. We had one in South Dakota, and there was a situation in which... what happened was it would follow the same process. So if somebody came in, like he said, from Alabama, and they were providing care to me, and I did not like that care, I would report that to the local jurisdiction, which for me was the city of Browns Valley. They reported it to our medical director. That medical director then reported it to the board, and then there was a full finding, and that's what happened in that situation too, went through the process. So that's how we do it. So when someone else comes under that state, they are working under the guidelines of the local jurisdiction. So if there is a complaint, it will go through that process and would eventually get to the EMS board, just like we do today.
Okay, thank you.
Great.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Chair Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Backer. Anytime we got any interstate compacts and agreements, there's always differences about territory and payment and that kind of thing. Do you see any changes in the ways that providers bill and get paid or the costs as people bill and get paid across the state lines in these zones? And secondarily, is there any opposition in other states where this isn't working out so hot or that there's a downside?
Representative Backer.
Chair and Representative Dean, currently, like right now, I'm using our service as an example. We pick up individuals in South Dakota. We bill through our local service. So, again, billing in EMS is dependent upon who is providing the service, what agency, if it's Northmore, if it's Stanford, if it's just a small service like Browns Valley or Ortonville, and so forth. So the billing, it doesn't matter who is serving on the ambulance, the billing is still going to be done through that service. So just like when we had a flood in 2007, it had a run, and we had EMTs from Detroit Lakes, wherever they were from, the billing was still done through the ambulance service. So that I don't see a problem. Part two of your question, Representative, I'm not familiar that there's been any opposition to this. Are you, Buck?
Mr. McAlpin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, not that I've heard of, but I think Representative Becker detailed it pretty good. To routinely bill in other states, we have to be a registered provider. So St. Paul, for example, has a lot of Hudsonites who come over and get in trouble in St. Paul and get an ambulance ride to Regions, but their Medicaid or their insurance is in Wisconsin. So we have to register for state Medicaid over there. And usually on big disasters, if they come for a disaster purpose, we usually work within the systems, and money comes from FEMA after the declaration when we get into events like that. But otherwise, it's routine billing if it's an issue where I'm coming over to work in Browns Valley because they're just short in the ambulance. We can just bill under the ambulance license. The CMS criteria everybody follows. It's the ambulance service that delivers the patient is the one that bills.
Chair Dean. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Of the seven states that now are in the compact, I see that I read that we need 10. So the question is there a cost to this to the state of Minnesota to do this? And then what other states now are currently in the process, and how long before we get into that compact with 10 states?
Mr. McAlpin.
Mr. Chairman, Representative McDonald, I'm not sure of the other eight states. On the email I saw the other day, they had listed that eight state legislatures or associations were bringing it forward. I would guess we'll have three more to get to the 10 this year. And where the costs come will be in two parts. One will be the fingerprinting issue. There's a five-year grace period as the compact rolls out, and then there would have to be a fee that the BCA would charge to do fingerprints and verify people's backgrounds. And then the other fee would be is the host state would have to make support the compact as it grows. So they would send a bill to the EMS regulatory board that says your share might be $1,700. So what's going to be interesting is it walks through to try to understand without all 50 states in the compact what that number is going to be. But those are the two areas.
Representative McDonald.
Very good. Thank you.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm not sure if it's the testifiers or staff. We have heard, and we will probably hear in the future, changes in scope of practice. As we enter into the compact, and we have in Minnesota or in a neighboring state, then we have, you know, crossover. What type of process is there for informing in compacts when we have a change of scope, and what implications might there be with, you know, dissimilar scopes of practice?
Mr. McAlpin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Quam, that's why this compact requires a standardized national registry process. So these states adopt a nationally registered standard. It was something that just kind of went on the last few years that some older paramedics and EMTs got to come back into the registry, the National Registry of EMTs and Paramedics, as part of a grandfathering clause. But the goal would be, as across the system, we would have the same definition for an EMT, and that's why we follow the national curriculum. So it's EMT, advanced EMT, and paramedic, critical care paramedic. And I'm guessing 3 or 4 years down the road, we'll see there's more discussions around the national change now as we see community paramedic services and things like that get more enabled in state legislatures.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So that would restrict Minnesota's capability to be adaptive in practice in the future?
Mr. McAlpin.
Mr. Chair, Representative, no. We could still do things that we'd want to do.
Representative Quam.
I think offline I'd like a discussion because we were ahead of the wage in community paramedic and some of these other activities, and Minnesota tends to be ahead. And frankly, I want to make sure that, you know, if we're ahead and it's a national accepted scope or anything containing in that national certification is different than what we're trying to improve, you know, what impacts that might have. I like the bill. I like the intent. I just want to make sure we don't have any future unintended consequences.
Any other questions from members? All right. Is there anyone from the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, Representative Backer, final word?
We'd appreciate your support, and our goal is to provide the network in place. If a disaster happens, then we can utilize resources from other states, because I've been through a disaster, and your resources are depleted extremely quickly, very quickly. So thank you for your time, and would appreciate a support on this.
All right, and with that, I will renew my motion that House File 324 be re-referred to the Committee on Civil Law. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails, and House File 324 is re-referred to the Committee on Civil Law. Thank you, Representative Backer. Next, we will take up House File 102. Which is Representative Zerwas's bill. Okay. And since Representative Zerwas is not a member of this committee, I will move that House File 102 be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. I understand there's an amendment. Representative Zerwas, do you want to speak to your bill first or offer the amendment?
There's an A1 amendment, Mr. Chair. If you can move the amendment to get the bill in the shape, would you like to talk about it?
Okay, I will move the A1 amendment. Representative Zerwas, what does the amendment do?
See if I have the amendment here in front of me. Yep, it's some cleanup language for ambulance services owned and operated by another governmental entity that chooses to participate by requesting the commissioner to determine the upper payment limit. It opens up the program, Mr. Chair.
Okay, any questions for Representative Zerwas for the amendment to get the bill in the form he wishes? Representative Albright.
Thank you, Chair. And Representative Zerwas, and just for clarification, could you just speak to lines 1.7 and 1.8 with regard to, I have a constituency that probably would be interested in understanding how that would affect their services in the Scott County area.
Representative Zerwas.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members, my understanding is that this isn't available to the government entities, and so that would include the tribal-owned. Dr. McAlpin from the Ambulance Association can further clarify on this, though.
Mr. McAlpin, welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name for the record on this one.
Mr. Chair, Buck McAlpin, Minnesota Ambulance Association. Representative Albright, this was at some language that came from DHS. The tribal government ambulances now are paid at a higher rate and differently, and they don't fall into the category of how we leverage IGTs. So they've asked us to put this in there to clarify that the, I believe it's eight of them, didn't qualify for the IGT leverage. Thank you.
All right, any further questions? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Zerwas, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, a few years ago we worked to add a few large ambulance services to the Intergovernmental Transfers Program. Now that model is established at DHS, we offer this legislation to mid-sized government ambulance services to use the same program. Those government ambulance services would have to opt in. The program allows the opportunity to leverage the underpayment from Medicaid by comparing the top three commercial payer rates with the Medicaid allowed rate. Ambulance services that could potentially benefit Rice Memorial Ambulance in Wilmer, Burnsville, Cloquet, Virginia, Hibbing, Maplewood, Woodbury, Cottage Grove, those types of ambulance services. And Buck McAlpin from the Minnesota Ambulance Association is here to help answer some questions if they get out of my pay grade.
Mr. McAlpin?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members, we did this, I believe, 3-4 years ago for We added St. Paul Fire and Hennepin County Ambulance, two large, high Medicaid volume providers, and try to keep it. I think many of you in this committee understand, have heard the intergovernmental transfers that some of the government health care systems benefit from. And I kind of use a simple analogy that if our Medicaid rate's $500 for a reimbursement to St. Paul Fire, and the top three commercial are $1,100, we're allowed to leverage that difference for the fee-for-service patients only, not managed care. And we take those calculations from the ambulance billing companies, send them over to our friends at DHS, and they calculate that payment limit and that difference, and then they report back of what we can get in a match from the federal government to support the underpayment of ambulance payments. And DHS has done a really nice job working the model together now. So one thing in the amendment Representative Zerwas put there was working with DHS that it's about 102 or 104 governmental ambulances, but some of them are very small, but only have a few Medicaid patients, and the work it would take to go through to do this wouldn't be beneficial. But the ones that Representative Zerwas mentioned are ones out there we've looked at. $1 million in leverage for Hennepin counties, lots of money for a system that size, but $35,000 to the Wilmer ambulance buys them half an ambulance. So things that we can do to add them to this, we'd appreciate.
All right, questions for Representative Zerwas? Seeing none, is there anyone from the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, Representative Zerwas, final word?
Thank you.
All right, and with that, Representative, I will renew my motion that House File 102, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion is adopted, and House File 102, as amended, is re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. Next, we'll take up House File 103. We have the bill in front of us. As soon as I move that House File 103 be referred to the committee, re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. Representative Zerwas, I see we have an amendment here as well. Do you want to speak to the bill first or to the amendment, or have the amendment put the bill in the form you want
to
be?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if you could move the A1-1 amendment, it's on the enactment dates.
All right, I will move the A1-1 amendment. Any questions to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A1-1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The A1-1 amendment is adopted. The bill is in the form you would like it. Representative Zerwas, to your bill.
Mr. Chair and members, House File 103 is the ambulance Medicaid rate increase. Last session, we provided a 5% rate increase for outstate ambulance services. That excludes the metro area and communities like Rochester, Duluth, and St. Cloud. This request is now to make that rate increase uniform and statewide. With that, Buck McAlpin is still here and still available to answer questions.
Mr. McAlpin, welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Mr. Chair, Buck McAlpin, Minnesota Ambulance Association. Yes, the legislature graciously extended a 5% rate increase to the rural ambulance providers, and we want to try this year and add it and make it a statewide increase. It's probably a little bit easier for the billing folks and DHS to manage, and this amendment Representative Zerwas offered also came with working with DHS about how we take a lot of language we wouldn't need in there and make it a statewide rate and not break it down outstate and metro.
All right, are there questions for Representative Zerwas or the testifiers? Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The thought last when that was passed to increase the rate for the rural was to, because it was the cost of business in rural Minnesota and the fact of making sure you kept those local ambulance companies alive, correct? And how has that worked since then?
Representative Zerwas or Mr. McAlpin?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative McDonald, we've heard back from our providers that it is an increase to them, 5%. We have the second, because of this legislature, we have the second highest Medicaid rates currently in the country for ambulance operations. And Wisconsin pays $120, Mr. Fennell, much lower than for Gold Cross and our partners that work there. for the same service, we get about $450 for around here. And with our Medicaid population, Medicare population, it has been a bump to them.
Representative McDonald.
No, that's good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this question probably is better served by directing it towards staff. And so for Mr. Chen, I'm just wondering how this rate increase that we're talking about, the 5%, is going to impact, if any, non-emergency medical transportation.
Mr. Chung.
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, I believe this rate would just be for the ambulance service category under medical assistance.
Representative Albright.
No further.
Any further questions? Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Zerwas, I noticed, you know, on the line 2.3, capitation payments made to managed care plans and county-based purchasing plans for ambulance services shall be increased.
Here we go again.
Reflect the rate. Right. Here we go again. So, we're going to pay more in capitation to the health plans. And you know, and I know, and I hope everybody in this committee knows that we have no way of making sure that that rate increase gets to the ambulance service, right? So why are we doing this? Because, or let me ask it a different way. How are you going to make sure? How are any of us going to know that the money that we're allocating, if the chair of the finance committee puts it in his budget, how are we going to know that that isn't just going to some other purpose?
Representative Zerwas.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, we've been down this road before with dental rate increases, and it's one of the biggest challenges, that one of the most frustrating endeavors I've been on in my short time here. The one thing that we've heard from our ambulance providers that were impacted with the 5% rate increase is that we're seeing the true 5% come through. And I can let Mr. McAlpin touch on that. But so far, for the ambulance services that we've been in touch with that were eligible for the non-metro rate increase, they saw that true increase.
Mr. McAlpin.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Rubin, yes. For this instance, we have had that discussion too with DHS, and we have saw that pass through. And for some providers, mostly the large system providers, they negotiate this as part of their big healthcare systems. But the ones that we were concerned with were the Willamer-sized ambulance or our rural ones. And we've got a very active, robust, about a 20-member reimbursement committee, the Ambulance Association, that said that even on the air medical side, really, they've realized it across the board.
Representative Liebling.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. That's good to know. That's good to know. But, you know, I sure wish we had some kind of a better feedback loop here to know. And of course, you know, I just have to say again, for anybody who might be listening, people think we have control over these rates. And the reality is we do not. And so it's when we put something like this in legislation, it's basically a wish and a hope, and not a guarantee that the person, that the providers that we've allocated the money to will ever get the money. So, you know, once again, this is my pitch for, we need to make a really serious change in this system, but at the very least, we need to have a way, and I hope DHS will, maybe DHS can simply take it upon themselves to report back to us what the plans actually did, because we don't even have a way of knowing unless we go from provider to provider and ask them.
And that's the, Mr. Chair.
Representative Zerwas.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lincoln, and that's the challenge we've had in the dental space with our dental rate increase, is literally going provider to provider. The organization with the Ambulance Association has us feeling a lot more confident in this increase, in this process. But this is something that you and I have shared frustration with for several years now.
All right. Any other questions for Representative Quam?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I'm curious about, you've got in here 120, 121, and you've got counties, you're talking about one case, but on line 121, you're talking about cities. There's part of Olmsted County that's outside the city of Rochester, and are they covered
by, you know, the activity there, or are they covered by the, you know, what building they come out of? You know, I'm just trying to understand.
Mr. McAlpin.
Mr. Chair, Reserve Quorum, I believe that right now it's going off of the base zip code, and Rochester is a great example. Those hub communities, we list in a certain piece of law in our ambulance statutes, and we have for years for volunteer incentive dollars, how we're able to staff with different staffing configurations, where we know Rochester, St. Cloud, or Duluth has the base volume to financially support the operation. Prime example is Marine and Lower St. Croix. That's right here in the metro. They do a few hundred runs a year, and we added them as a little line to include in the rate increase last year. So this does clean it up, that the two pieces of law, that this would be statewide, that even if it's just downtown Rochester and Gold Cross's operation there, that it would affect the entire area around them. They're actually getting that rate increase from last year around the city lines of Rochester and the big communities.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was just looking at page 2, and as amended, we deleted the capitation payments and the rest of that sentence, and then all the words after the word services on 2.2. So I just wanted to point that out.
Mr. Chung.
Mr. Chair, Representative Peterson, I believe that change was made at the suggestion of DHS. DHS staff had stated that they automatically would sort of pass on in the form of higher capitation rates any fee-for-service increase unless the language specifically said do not pass the increase through. So that was a technical suggestion on their part.
Any further questions for Representative Zerwas? Seeing none, is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against House File 103? Seeing none, Representative Zerwas, final word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I ask the Chair renew his motion.
And with that, I will renew my motion that House File 103, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The bill is adopted and moved to be re-referred. No, it is just re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance as amended. Finally, today we have House File 106 from Representative Zerwas, and I will move that House File 106 be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. And there's an amendment to this one. Same procedure, Representative Zerwas?
If you're willing.
I will move the A1 amendment, Representative Zerwas, to the amendment.
The A1 amendment cleans up the bill. The big, this is a legislation before you, clarifies what we passed last session regarding community MTs. This adds the word post in front of discharge to the bill to be sure that services rendered and paid for include discharge-only work and follow-up. So in working with DHS and CMS, they'd have the request that, for clarification's sake, we make sure that's clear, that's post-discharge.
All right. Any questions to the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A1 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The A1 amendment is adopted, and the bill is in the form that Representative Zerwas would like it. Representative Zerwas, to your bill.
Mr. Chair, and that's the extent, basically, of the bill. It's cleanup language in working cooperation with DHS and CMS. Always reliable. Buck McAlpin from the Minnesota Ambulance Association is standing by if you have any questions.
Mr. McAlpin, welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Mr. Chair, Buck McAlpin, Minnesota Ambulance Association. I think Representative Zerwas hit it on the head. A wonderful lady, Sean Ed Healy, over at DHS, has literally, all the way back to community paramedic, we have the payment models up, systems have been up and been able to work because of the hard work she's done to make sure folks know how to build Medicaid for it and to put the program together. And as we walked back to Representative Quam's comment about innovation, as the community paramedic program's up and going very well, now we've got to the EMT level where community EMTs are doing some post-follow-up. And when they looked at this, she said, and I believe it was CMS that worked with her, they recommended those couple changes as they finished the payment methodology for us.
All right, questions? Representative Liebling.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And Mr. McAlpin, I think the bill's just, fine. I have no problem with it. But maybe it's a good opportunity to, if you could kind of give us an update, a little more of an update about how this is working. And I'm particularly interested in, do we have any way to measure the impact of this program? Have we collected any data? Do we know anything maybe even about cost savings? You know, if we're reducing readmissions through this program or anything like that? Really, since we maybe have a couple of minutes left here, it'd be good to know.
Mr. McAlpin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, where's my PowerPoint when I need it? Yes, we have, on the community paramedic side now, October 2012, those programs have kicked off, and both rural and metro, the metro especially, I can speak a lot about the North Memorial program. There's 17 community paramedics in that program. We have 34,000 members in our IHP demo product we worked on with DHS. Their major focus for those community paramedics are that population. The health plans have been wonderful to work with. Blue Cross and Blue Shield has stepped up and offered $50,000 grants to rural providers and even metro providers to do some different innovation around following up with pediatric models. But we look at our data across the board in our Big North Memorial CP program, and overall about 48% to 51% of everybody that we work with. The CHF population, we've reduced about 50.6% following our large congestive heart population at Maple Grove and North Memorial. Hennepin County reports some of the same numbers to us, Alina and their programs. We do have very detailed data, and if there was time in this committee, Mr. Chair, I'd love to have the CPs come in and probably do a presentation. On the community EMT side, there's a great project working out with St. Louis Park Fire, with Plymouth Fire is involved with it, Eden Prairie Fire, Richfield Fire, working in collaboration with North Memorial and Hennepin County and the healthcare systems, and most importantly, the health partner system with Park Nicollet, that Park Nicollet's giving them patients that they're following up with post-discharges. And we're just now starting to roll that out into the outstate to some of our smaller systems to utilize.
All right. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't know if this is a question for the author or for Mr. McAlpin, but I'm looking at the language of the bill, both in the title in line 1.8 and then in line 1.9, the additions of the words medical response to the title and then to the definition, and I'm just wondering what that is about.
Mr. McAlpin.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Murphy, I think Elizabeth and I have had this conversation. It's how the initial bill passed 2 years ago. That's the title of it in our EMS statute.
And so, Mr. Chair,
Murphy.
And Mr. McAlpin, or maybe for staff, is this just conforming language then to the way the law is currently drafted?
Mr. McAlpin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, correct.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Any further questions for Representative Zerwas? Seeing none, is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against House File 106? Seeing none, Representative Zerwas, final word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I think as Representative Liebling alluded to and Mr. McAlpin informed the committee, I think this type of follow-up care and early intervention is one of the keys, key things that we have at bending down the cost curve when we try to clamp down on hospital readmissions. So I'm in full support of the program and excited to move the bill forward.
All right, and with that, I will renew my motion that House File 106, as amended, be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The bill is adopted, House File 106, as amended, to be re-referred to the Committee on Health and Human Service Finance. Before we adjourn today, members, I just wanted to make a quick note. House File 464 that was originally on the agenda today was the scope of practice bill that came forward, and there was a little cognitive dissonance on just exactly why I would have a hearing on scope of practice and how we're going to take a different approach to that this year and then have a scope of practice bill up the next week. That was a bit of an oversight on my part initially when scheduling the bills for today, and so I apologize for that and anyone who was involved with that or who may have came today for that. I think what we're going to, what we are going to do this year with scope of practice and licensing bills is we're going to follow a lot of what Representative Liebling had done when she was chair of this committee several years ago. We will post the criteria and form for which people who have scope of practice and licensing bills coming forward to fill out. We'll be following the DHS presentation that we received the other day on this, so as bills come forward, they must fill out that form. We will post that form on the committee's website, allow for about 2 weeks for people to respond before we will consider giving a bill a hearing so that we have ample time to ensure that people have the opportunity to make sure that there's a thorough vetting of those licensing bills. And so as we move forward, if you are approached by someone to carry a licensing bill or a scope of practice bill or have one of your own, this is the process we will be taking moving forward. And I would like to thank our committee administrator and Representative Liebling for bringing that little dissonance mistake of mine to my attention so we can get that resolved. If there are any questions, you can talk to me afterwards. With that, the committee is adjourned.